2. Simulacrum of Surprise. That January, Lai Zhen had been one of the more popular speakers at the annual demolition conference in London. Not one of the richest or most powerful. The wealthy had been elsewhere, and their paths had rarely intersected with the actual content providers on the lower floors of the conference building. While Lai Zhen was delivering a talk on 5 tech survival tools you literally can't live without and 10 new ways to use them, Martha Einkorn, assistant to Lenk Sketlish, stepped from the elevator into the terraced roof garden. Champagne popped with a sound like gunfire and pale fluid glugged into glasses. For Martha, there had been 1,000 things to arrange to reach this moment. If everything went well, this moment was only the beginning. Everyone was there, pointing out features of the London skyline in the January sun, or ignoring the skyline because they'd seen it so often before. Zimri Nomic of Anvil, his asymmetrical face tanned, attempting the smile someone had coached him in. By his side, confident and relaxed, remembering all the names and faces, was his black British wife, Sela Nomic, once a computer science graduate from Cambridge, these days mostly known for finding useful ways to give away some of Nomic's huge fortune. Lenk Sketlish of Fantail was there, of course, lean and pale in an immaculate suit. Martha was by his side. Ellen Bywater, CEO of Medlar, recently widowed, of Irish heritage, elegant as always in natural fibers and a neutral palette, turning her head to the side as if she could hear her late husband Will still murmuring in her ear. Ellen Bywater had brought her youngest child to the party. Badger Bywater was a person with short dark hair and black fingernails who had recently used their Fantail channel to post critical videos about technology companies. How very Ellen Bywater that her response to criticism was to invite Badger to this event. In a similar vein, hiding behind a melting ice sculpture of a heron, Albert Dabrowski, ousted founder of Medlar, Hawaiian shirt buttoned comfortably over his round belly, drinking with quiet determination. Ellen always invited him to high-profile Medlar events because of her dedication to the story that she had made him a tremendously wealthy man, much wealthier than he would have been if she'd let him keep on mismanaging his company, and probably he was pleased. Dabrowski accepted these invitations sporadically, never brought his husband, always drank to excess, and took some pleasure in mentioning to strangers that he was the wicked fairy at the feast. Martha smiled at Zimri and then moved her glance away, more comfortable for him, awkward as he always was at events like these. Of Lenk, Ellen, and Zimri, Martha had the most time these days for Zimri. He'd never said so publicly, but Martha guessed he was on the autism spectrum. He was vastly intelligent, with a greater grip on the details that made up his world shaker of a company than even Lenk or Ellen could conceive. In another era, he might have been an academic or even a monk, and the world would not have demanded parties from him. But of course, this was all Martha's imagination. Perhaps in an earlier era, he would have been the ambitious advisor to a ruthless king. The facts of people's lives are as they are. Far from being made by his era, Zimri had made the first decades of the 21st century his own. His company, Anvil, was worth more than Medlar and Fantail combined. There was no sense in feeling sorry for him. Sela Nomic noticed Martha looking away and, between the camera clicks of the roving photographer, met her glance and winked. Martha nodded, carefully concealing her smile before the cameras turned her way. Martha felt a sharp stab of loneliness. This was new. It was troubling for these emotions to be thawing in her now. She'd been lonely for a long time and had only recently understood that her prolific online forum habit and her working relationships, as intense and engaging as these things were no substitutes for real trust, real vulnerability. This was no time for the ice inside her to melt. Come on, this was not the moment. She'd dealt with this for years now. Refocus. Lenk's needs were always enough to fill her attention. Martha watched Badger Bywater walk into Lenk's field of vision, sipping a dark purple cocktail through a straw, and knew this was going to be trouble. After decades working with him, she had a sense for his moods and his desires, knowing even before he did that something was going to pique his interest or prick his anger. "Is that a straw?" said Lenk Sketlish. "How come you have a straw?" Badger Bywater looked up with a perfect simulacrum of surprise. "Me?" Badger Bywater had been coming to this sort of event with their mother since they were 7 or 8 years old. No one could ever feel more at home among the $85 sashimi spoon canapes or the exquisite flowers flown in refrigerated from Australia than Badger Bywater. Badger didn't give a shit about any of this anymore and wasn't afraid to show it. "Yeah, you," said Lenk Sketlish. "How did you get that straw?" "They told me there were no straws. You can't get a straw anywhere anymore. You know this is what's wrong with the world. Lenk looked around for someone to agree with him. Badger managed to express both tremendous boredom and not inconsiderable disdain. I brought my own straw, dude. See, this is what I'm talking about, said Lenk. Look at the cost of this party, and you have to bring your own straw? Zimri Nomik murmured, so quietly that Lenk Sketlish almost didn't hear him. The evidence about plastics in the ocean is extremely compelling. Something about the murmuring enraged Lenk. There would have been a time, not so many years earlier, when Lenk would have rounded on Zimri, asking him if he was calling him stupid. But he'd done his meditation. He'd listened to Martha. He did not call Zimri Nomik a pathetic beta cuck, and he did not tell him to fuck off. Instead, he rolled his eyes, said, aha, and walked away. He'd been on a learning journey. How do you put up with him? Said Ellen Bywater softly from directly behind Martha, the tone of malicious sympathy utterly unconcealed. Once, several years ago, Ellen Bywater had tried to tempt Martha to jump ship to Medlar with talk of female solidarity and true advancement in a company that valued her. Martha had refused because, on balance, she liked truth better than lies, and she thought Link's volatility and childish petulance more truthful than Ellen's polish. Ellen Bywater had neither forgiven nor forgotten the refusal. Mom, whispered Badger, don't talk to people like that. This is her job, okay? What's she gonna do? Side with you against her boss? Disagree with the CEO of Medlar? God, you don't even see it. I do just fine, said Martha. I'm grateful you're interested in my life. The gong sounded. It was time for the speeches. They had already been pre-written, practiced, prepared. They were here to celebrate an environmental collaboration between Medlar, Fantail, and Anvil as a way to protect against climate change by using tiny drones at high altitudes to rearrange the weather. Selenomic explained the coding that went into this technology with informality and charm. We're plugged into weather monitoring all over the world. The drone swarms have an area they patrol, but if we need them to, they'll gather together into bigger and bigger groups. We can turn typhoons into light drizzle, and if you want some rain from a clear blue sky... Sela pressed a button on her forearm thin screen, and, theatrically, she took out an Anvil-branded umbrella and raised it over her head. The party guests looked up, smiling. The sky above was azure, bright, dazzlingly lucent, one of London's piercingly clear January mornings. Then there was a shimmer in the air and a faint buzzing hum. If you squinted, you could just about make out motes of dust forming into a spheroid shape high above the convention center. Look, shouted a man, pointing upward like a biblical prophet. A cloud was forming, small and then larger, a dark cloud on the horizon moving toward the building rapidly. Sela, smiling, spoke softly into the microphone. We've steered that moisture all the way from Lithuania. 4 hours ago, this was a storm over Gajunai Forest. The cloud thickened, blackened. It moved into place over the roof gardens of the Demolition Conference Center. There was a sense of pressure. People's ears popped. And then, very faintly, the sound of thunder. It began to rain. The guests applauded as they gratefully accepted umbrellas from the waitstaff. The rain was heavy, intense. It smelled woody, sharp like pine. There was a quick flicker of lightning, someone else's storm, brought there for their enjoyment. Zimri Nomik took to the stage, Sela stepping back. Big whoop, said Zimri, making it rain in London, in January. There was brief scattered laughter. Sela did not react, as she never reacted these days to Zimri's many sideswipes. How about sunshine? Zimri pressed the pad of his thumb to a preset button on his smart pin. The drones rearranged themselves in the sky. A patch of blue began to burn in the center of the cloud. It grew larger, becoming brighter and brighter. Too bright. Much brighter than the sky in London could ever be, even on the hottest days of these 2 hot years. Servers handed out large, dark eye shades to the guests. We're going to make a tiny hole in the ozone, said Zimri. Just for fun. Make sure you're wearing the shades. There was a brief white-hot burst, a feeling among the guests that they were experiencing the true fury of the sun, the sharp, smiling mouth that the atmosphere had always protected them from. For a few seconds, they were afraid. And then it was over. Zimri took off his sunglasses. That's just to demonstrate the power of this technology. We can move any part of the atmosphere, we can monitor where it's too thin, and we can fix it. It's great work. He raised one fist awkwardly in the air to a round of applause. Selenomic, in prepared improvisation, grabbed the microphone and said, "Bring back the London rain." And it came back, right on cue. Ellen Bywater took the stage next to explain the many humanitarian functions this technology could have. Imagine being able to irrigate crops in drought-stricken regions with pinpoint accuracy to thicken the cloud over melting ice caps. Then Link Sketlish, crowing about the technological achievement. There was, he said, no limit to this technology, really. They were just beginning to explore how it could be used to build, to alter trade winds for speedier travel, even to destroy unwanted infrastructure. He did not take any questions on what that infrastructure might be or who would decide whether it was wanted. For a moment, Badger Bywater, Selenomic, Albert Dabrowski, and Martha Einkorn stood together as the rain pattered onto the rooftop. Images of them were photographed by a camera drone but never used for publicity, because who would be interested in these people? The 20-something dropout child of a billionaire, the former coder now pampered wife of a billionaire, an ousted CEO, and a glorified secretary. But in the pictures that were never used and never witnessed by any but the all-seeing eye of the machine, they looked somehow easy with each other, as if there was an unspoken agreement between them, as if, despite their differences, they were of one mind. Albert Dabrowski, already fairly drunk, said very quietly, "You know what they're using this for, right? This has nothing to do with helping anyone, anywhere. It's for their own bunkers. They can control the weather, make sure that whatever happens everywhere else, there's always rain when they want it, always the sun when they need it, no matter where they are, no matter what happens to the rest of us."
"Obviously," said Selenomic.
"I mean, they've weaponized the weather," said Badger Bywater. "We can't do this here," said Martha, who had always been able to put her feelings into a box, to not reach out, to not admit she was lonely, to do the next sensible thing over and over. This was the last time these four people would allow themselves to be seen together in public before the apocalypse. Martha Einkorn, also known on the survivalist forum named the day as Onecorn, thought, "Would I save the city for 50? And the fat Lithuanian raindrops burst on the paving slabs of a London roof in January like the biblical blessing of rain.